Indeed, indeed. You know, workers renovating an Italian museum claiming that the building is haunted. The National Archaeological Museum in Naples has now invited paranormal experts from all over the world to get to the bottom of the mystery. Builders who were working overnight in the museum claim that they heard soul-piercing screams, experienced plunging temperatures, and even saw ghosts. The experts are now due to arrive in September to simply investigate. Up next, John Kachuba joins us again on Coast to Coast, Ghost Hunters, on the trail of mediums, dowsers, spirit seekers, and other investigators of America's paranormal world. Next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. John Kachuba, author, paranormal investigator, a certified ghost hunter. He's investigated more than 80 hauntings and locations in the last 3 years. John has also written books related to the paranormal, teaches creative writing at Ohio University, lives in Ohio, and he is one of America's most haunted investigators. Here he is, John Kachuba, back on Coast to Coast. Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, George, how are you doing?
Good, looking forward to this.
Me too.
We should send you out to Naples, Italy to check that museum.
You know, I heard that, and being half Italian myself, I'd love to go there and check it out. I didn't hear that story until just now on your show, but that's quite amazing, although not a surprise that ghosts are popping up at renovations. It's pretty common.
If you went to a site like that, what would you first do, John? How would you handle that?
Well, my first thing was I would go in just totally objectively. I wouldn't take in any, you know, any equipment or anything else like that like people do. I would just go in and walk around and just sort of get the feeling for it, just see what my own senses pick up first. I always tell people that I'm not a psychic, I'm not a medium, but I think we all have some innate abilities to tune into some of these things. And if we pay attention to our bodies, what they're telling us, a lot of times, you know, we can make some contact. So that'd be the first thing that I would do. And then if I got some feelings out of that, I would take a lot of pictures, see what comes up in photos, and then at some point, maybe actually do a big investigation, like with some ghost teams that you see on television or something along those lines.
Well, what I find fascinating, a lot of these people who were working at this Italian museum site, they were skeptics, except once they got into the place, they said, you know what, this is weird stuff. We're hearing screams and we're seeing ghosts. They're all believers now.
Right, right. Well, I think that's what happens. I mean, it only takes an experience like that to make you think, okay, something is going on for sure. And if you're not an actual believer at that point, you are at least a believer in the idea that there is something paranormal, which, you know, simply means something out of the normal. Whether it's a ghost or not, there is something going on that needs to be explained.
I guess if you believe in life after death, you've got to believe in ghosts, don't you?
Well, I would think so. I mean, that's sort of the crux of a lot of my thought, that even if you don't take a theological point of view on it, if you still believe that there is some kind of existence for us afterwards, whether it's based on quantum physics or based on theology, yeah, then there must be some form that we exist in, whatever that is. And a ghost might simply be one of those forms of the afterlife.
How did John Kachuba get interested in all this?
Well, you know, I grew up in New England, which was, a haunted place like so many places are. But I had a lot of stories to fall back on there. And I met the Warrens, Lorraine and Ed Warren,
yeah,
fairly early in life. Of course, Ed is, you know,
he's gone.
Away. Right. But, they sort of clued me into some of the things, especially a trip I had taken up to Dudleytown in Connecticut, which is a pretty well-known 18th century, maybe an earlier village that is nothing now but cellar holes up on a mountaintop. But I had taken some photos up there and got some intriguing anomalies in there, things that actually looked like faces in the bushes. And I just contacted the Warrens. They were gracious enough to invite me to their house, look at my photos, and started talking to me about their experiences up at Dudleytown. And I kind of got hooked at that point. So I've had an interest for a long time, but I didn't really start writing about any of these things until my first book, Ghost Hunting Ohio, which came out in 2004.
That's right.
So it's been about 7 years now, and I'm now into three books and a fourth one coming out again in about 2 weeks. So, you know, yeah, it's been increasing in the last several years for sure.
What's the fourth one going to be on? Can you say?
Well, it's sort of a sequel to Ghost Hunting Ohio. It's called Ghost Hunting Ohio on the Road Again.
Charles Kuralt.
Right, Charles Kuralt and me and Willie Nelson too. We're gonna
yeah.
We're going to co-promote that. No, not really, but that'd be great having Willie Nelson promote my book. But I don't think I can get him to do it.
Well, he might. He's interested in this stuff. Do you find a difference between ghosts and demons?
You know, when people say demons, to me, that has so much theology behind it. That's a theological term, you know, demons versus angels, implying God versus the devil.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like to get into those terms. What I would say is that there are certainly energies, I think, in the universe that are negative, just as there are that are positive. And I think that's really just a result of who we are. You know, we're a mix of positive and negative energies. We're not all good. We're not all bad. And so I think that when we go on, we become the same people in another life that we are here. We don't change. We don't suddenly become, you know, wonderful people if we are rotten here on the earth and vice versa. So I think a lot of what we say are demons might truly just be the spirits of people that were here before, that lived here before, that are now, you know, that were not particularly nice and remain not particularly nice in another realm, you know.
But you don't think they've been sent by Satan to, you know, take advantage of people?
I don't. I don't buy into that. I mean, again, for me, that's a theology that I don't subscribe to that. But certainly there are a lot of people that do. And, you know, none of us know really the truth. I just don't think that's the way it is. I find that hard to believe that there's a master evil person, just as I find it hard to believe there's a master good person. I think the universe is what it is. I think it's a mix of everything. And I think there's all aspects of, you know, good and evil in it, without any sort of superior being on either side, you know, sort of calling the shots.
Well, what about possessions? Different?
I think possession is different, yes. A lot of people will say that is demonic, you know, that some being actually enters into your body, takes control, you know, makes you do horrible things, you know, whatever. For me, I've read a lot about exorcisms, and in fact, I reviewed a book on exorcism called The Rite, which is now a movie. And what I found in my studies is that most of the time, there's a strong psychological basis for the behavior there. People claim to be demons or claim that it's the work of demons, but I think that's so sort of wish fulfillment in some ways. I think it's psychological, just as poltergeists are. I think we can work ourselves up into states that mimic and mirror all kinds of bizarre and strange behavior that has nothing to do with demons, or for that matter, with any other being. It's all self-created. That's my feeling on that.
Then what are ghosts per se, John? I mean, are they entities that just don't know they're dead yet? What are they?
You know, most people, when you ask that question, George, if you ask ghost hunters, they will start to tell you exactly just what a ghost is, that, well, it's the spirit of a dead person and all this. And I have five different explanations that I think might apply. I mean, one, I think we have to look at everything to really try to rule out everything and to be sort of scientific, if you will, in our approach. I think the first thing is that they're psychological entities in the sense that I think it's a possibility that we create them, just as I mentioned before with the poltergeist.
Mm-hmm.
Wish fulfillment. You know, if you're very close to your grandmother and she passes away and you really miss her, there's every reason in the world to think that someday you'll see her sitting on your couch simply because you want her to be there. Now, is she really there? Well, not really. I mean, for you, it's a reality, but it's not an objective reality. You're creating her, just as Tibetan monks have created thought forms that they call tulpas through meditation, you know, beings that actually come alive. So I think there's a psychological basis. I think there's also, the second one is just sort of basically organic brain disorder. I mean, you might just be nuts. You know?
Yeah, that happens. That's yeah. A possibility. You can't rule it out.
You cannot rule it out, absolutely. The third one is, I think, that a lot of what we consider to be ghostly activity or paranormal activity is simply that, paranormal, which means that it might be naturally occurring laws of physics or science that we just don't have the we don't understand the science behind it just yet. Just as we didn't know anything about radio waves until, what, 100 years ago or whatever, we didn't know what microwaves were. They do all these incredible things. But little by little, as our technology gets better, we start to understand our universe a little more. We might understand that that salt shaker that suddenly jumped across the table was not moved by a ghost, but it was some other kind of force or naturally occurring force that we just don't understand right now. So that's a third possibility. The fourth one is interesting. That gets into the realm of quantum physics and quantum mechanics.
There's a science behind this.
Yes, very much. And it's it's a fascinating science when you start reading this stuff. I don't understand it. You know, it's very, very deep. But when you start talking about the idea of parallel universes or alternate realities, almost having, you know, doppelgangers in a sense throughout the universe, then it's very possible that what we consider to be ghosts are actually some manifestation of those theories. In other words, if there's an alternate reality or a parallel universe, some of the theories maintain that these universes from time to time are sort of they're randomly floating in a way like amoebas, and they time to time bump up against each other, and there's a crossover for a second. It could be that what we see as a ghost could be something in another dimension, another reality. And at the same time, he might be seeing us as something in another, you know, as a ghost on his end of the scale. And for a second,
no, that's
the
true.
Collide.
That is true. But some people testify that whatever these entities are, a lot of people think that they're departed loved ones, John.
Right.
So, you know, I would say, let's say, for example, that they could be from other dimensions, that they're very normal. It's a natural occurrence. But the fact that people say, it's my dead grandfather, it's my uncle, it's my grandmother, it's my brother. To me, when they start saying that, then it gives it a different perspective. And I haven't quite figured that part out yet. Have you?
No, I haven't. But that's number five, George.
Ah, all right.
Which is that
I'm peeking.
No, it's just very possible that what we call ghosts are in fact the spirits of dead people, loved ones or friends or even strangers who have passed on, and for whatever reason, we are able to make contact with them in the realm to, you know, wherever it is that we go when we die. So you have to put that one in there that, yeah, it's just a possibility. Although, again, you know, if you're talking about relatives, that could also go back to sort of the not just wish fulfillment, but
manifestation.
Right. And I think the psychological connections that we have, especially with people in our family, special, you know, loved ones. There is, you know, they say love transcends death and stronger than death. Well, I think there's something to that we have to pay attention to.
Of these five possibilities, is there any one that you seem is a little more plausible?
Well, you know, again, I've been reading a lot more about the quantum physics, and I'm thinking that there's some interesting theories there. But I also don't rule out simply the spiritual aspect. You know, I said that I didn't buy into a lot of the theological trappings, but I do think that there is something about our connections that we have on Earth to people that are with us while they're with us that maybe go on afterwards. And so, yeah, I think there's a possibility that, you know, we could be contacting people that we have known and loved before.
I'm going to ask you the controversial question about religion for a moment, John.
Sure.
Do you think that in religion they created things like demons, exorcisms to keep people fearful in order to control their flock?
Well, that's an interesting question. And I would have to say that I think certainly some religions have done that. You know, fear is a great motivator.
For anything.
For anything, indeed, right. And I think that, you know, there's political structures that have used that. And I think a lot of churches are not much more than sort of political entities in some way, and that they have also used it. And I don't even really necessarily mean in a malicious way, but you know, according to their beliefs, this is what is out there, and so we have to protect against it so that you're on the true path and, you know, whatever. I think that's there. Not every religion. There's a lot of religions that are much lighter on that and much more relaxed about things, but you know, there are some that are pretty rigid.
If these spirits exist, why? What are they supposed to do? You know, everything's supposed to have a purpose. What's a ghost for?
Yeah, it's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I mean, I'm always amazed when I go on an investigation and you see something that happens, and it is something like a salt shaker moving 3 feet across the table. And you say to yourself, well, now, wait a minute. If this is the afterlife, you mean this is what I'm going to do for all eternity? I'm going to move a salt shaker 3 feet across the table every now and then? You know, it's not much of a job. So you wonder what it's all about. I think, personally, that ghosts, if they're here, are here for a reason. I think they're here either to bring us messages or to perhaps help us. This is what the spiritualists believe, you know, members of the spiritualist church, that their loved ones, you know, communicate with them through seance, through mediums, all the time to help us, to guide us in our lives here on earth, to not necessarily protect us, but try to give us guidance and judgment and wisdom and love, you know. So I think that's a lot of the reasons for them. There are some people that think that ghosts are just simply trapped here, lost on their way from here to there, wherever there is. And I think that's a possibility as well. I think those are different spirits in the sense that they're just confused and wandering souls right now. So I think there's different reasons why they might be here.
Well, that could be. But I keep harping back to the evil part of some of this, John. There's something else there. Maybe it's not even in the ghostly realm. Maybe these demonic spirits are supposed to be part of this other existence. You know, I've always believed that when there's good, there's bad. There's negative, there's positive. I think this universe especially is all based on balance. And you can only balance if you have two sides. And I'm just wondering if that's why we have these kinds of demonic spirits, to balance the good part of it.
It could be. I mean, you're referring, it sounds more to, you know, sort of Eastern philosophy,
yeah.
Yin, yang, you know, there is a good and a bad, there's two sides. And I think that's true. But I also think, again, if you look at quantum physics, that quantum physics is sort of taking the two sides approach and pretty much smashing it and saying, there's not two sides. There's an infinite number of sides. There aren't sides. You know, everything is in a state of flux. Everything is in a state of motion, and everything is all at once. And so, you know, what happens to that nice dichotomy of good and evil in a case like that? That's what I'm studying now. And I think it's interesting because I agree with you. Everything that I've learned up to now has been, well, you know, for every action, there's a reaction.
Sure.
For every night, there's a day, right? For every sun, there's a moon, et cetera, et cetera. But it seems to me that the universe is a lot more complicated than we thought. That's almost too simplistic to explain really the universe that we inhabit.
See, I think the angels balance the demons.
Mm-hmm.
We've got that. And it's probably a very natural form of existence in this universe.
Well, it could be, and I mean, this is very biblical. You know, it talks about the balance. There are angels, there are devils. There's a cosmic battle between, you know, God and Satan, the good and the bad, and we frame everything that way. But you know, that's Western tradition. That's Western theology. That's not necessarily what you get in other cultures. So we're talking about it, you and I, from a very sort of insular frame of mind. We're talking about it from what we know, but that isn't the case in every culture. It's not always this cosmic battle between good and evil. A lot of them feel sort of what I said before, and maybe getting an early edge on the idea of quantum physics, is that everything is together. There's no separation, that everything is all at once. So there is good and evil, I suppose, but they can't easily be broken out into, you know, opposing camps. That it's all sort of mixed into the ether at one time.
All right, well, we're going to talk more about this and also some of these haunted locations, John. Why are they haunted? John Kachuba, our guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. And we're going to get into your ghost stories in a big way tonight with John Kachuba. Next hour we'll start on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, you can be a StreamLink member, a Coast Insider, for less than 25 cents a day. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com, find out why so many of your pals are becoming that insider. It's almost like a Coast Club. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com and look for the banner there that says Insider. John, how do we explain haunted locations? Why? What are they?
Well, I think there's a lot of things going on with haunted locations. Part of it, if you believe that these manifestations that we see are created by energy, if ghosts are beings of energy, which I think is probably valid. Some of the haunted locations are simply places where there's a lot of energy, naturally occurring energy, either from what they call ley lines or natural magnetism in the earth or whatever it might be. And so they're sort of good conduits for events like that because they already have sort of that in the natural environment. But I think it's also something else going on that sometimes ghost hunters will call residual hauntings, which is basically the impression or the memory of some event that happened in that area, a battle, a tragedy, a car wreck.
Mostly a tragedy.
Yes, mostly a tragedy. That's right. And the theory behind it is that the emotional content of that tragedy, that event, is left, in the form of energy in the environment. And that under the right conditions at the right times, for who knows what reason, it replays. It replays itself again and again and again. Until finally, at some point, it dissipates and it disappears. You think of a lot of hauntings in England, that castles have been haunted forever and ever and ever. And then gradually people say, well, the ghost isn't around anymore. Well, I think that was a residual haunting, that just after a while, the energy eventually does transform into something else. And it's no longer in that area, so you no longer have that that type of haunting. So I think those are part of the reasons why we get hauntings in some areas.
Do we hear of stories of hauntings from apparitions of people who have died of old age? They just passed away in their bed at home? Or generally, are they indeed tragic endings?
Well, that's the thing. There are two. And it seems to me that the more tragic endings are the ones that seem to be the residual hauntings. But certainly, we get people that, as you say, just die peacefully in their sleep at the age of, 96 years old or something, and they are still around. And we have to wonder what sort of the mechanism for that. How does that happen? Because it's different from residual. That is a haunting that is more interactive, especially, if you can relate to that ghost, if you can talk to it, see it, if it interacts with you in some way, then that's not a residual haunting. That's something different. And I suppose that can occur anywhere, anytime. It doesn't need some kind of a major precipitating, horrendous event or tragic event to happen.
No, it doesn't, I guess. Now, let's talk more about these locations. Mm-hmm. Of the ones you've looked at, you've investigated how many now? Over 80?
Well, yeah, it's actually probably closer to, well, it's over 100 now.
100 sure, now. Yeah. They keep coming.
Yeah.
Has there been a spot that scared you, John?
Well, yeah, there was one place that I really liked, and it was the former Athens Lunatic Asylum in Athens, Ohio. And it is now part of Ohio University. It's a building called The Ridges. This used to be a lunatic asylum back in the old Victorian era. And, of course, patients were treated to all kinds of awful treatments, simply as medical treatment, but they seem cruel and inhumane to us now. And a lot of these people went through some horrendous things just being, incarcerated there. I shouldn't say that. Locked up, I guess, there. But I did an investigation there with a group out of Columbus, Ohio. And we had recorded an EVP down in electronic voice phenomena down in a basement room that had formerly been literally a padded cell. In those days, unfortunately, if you had people who were violent or in danger of hurting themselves or others, you had no alternative but to isolate them and lock them up because you couldn't treat them. We didn't have the medication and everything else that we have today. So these poor people were literally locked up and just left to battered themselves against the wall and whatever, trying to get out. And we had a recorder in there, and we locked up that door when we left, and we continued the investigation of the building, and later on we picked up this tape. And, now comes the work that you don't see on television too much when you're watching the ghost shows, is all the hours and hours of analyzing your data, listening to digital recordings and looking at film, mm-hmm. and looking at still photos. But as we're listening to this, we're just getting white noise, you know. We're half asleep because we're just kind of hearing nothing, you know. And then all of a sudden, just in the middle, we hear this, "Would you help us?" Just like that. And George, you know, I've heard a lot of EVPs in my lifetime, and some of them, I listen and I go, I don't hear anything.
Right. You know, we've had some, and we've had a lot of guests, and they've wanted us to play their EVPs over the radio.
Right.
And number one, they're very difficult to hear in the first place. Over the radio, it's even harder. Can you imagine people driving in their cars and trucks?
Right.
And then you play this stuff that goes... And they said, yeah, did you hear him say that?
Right. Exactly.
And you can't hear it. I've listened and I listen and I play it back. But when you come across a good one, as you probably have, they're remarkable, aren't they?
Oh, they're remarkable. I mean, when we heard that, I mean, you know, literally the old saying, the hair stood up in the back of my neck. I mean, it really did, because it was so clear. And it was just, you know, I said, well, that was incredible, you know. And it makes, not only was it clear, but the words make sense, you know, considering the location, considering the history, considering the fact of who would have been in that room. You know, of course, in their lucid moments, they would be saying, would you help us? You know, would you get us out of here? You know, whatever. So it made sense. It sounded like somebody actually just trying to reach out to you now and ask for help. And that might still be, that EVP might still be on the internet. It was the Columbus Exploration Society. They have a website, and it might still be up there. You can listen to it. It's pretty clear if it's still there. I hope it is.
What's the difference between a ghost and a soul?
Well, I think it's a good question. Again, we're getting, I think it's a theological territory.
Could be.
To talk about soul. I think what a ghost is, I think it's the elemental essence of whatever it means to be human. And if, you know, and somebody would say, well, aha, but a soul isn't really human because that's eternal and humans aren't eternal. That's a more theological thing. I'd say, but maybe humans are eternal. I mean, maybe, again, looking at Einstein's theory is about energy. If we're all energy, and we are, everything in the universe is energy, and we know that all the energy in the universe is constant, cannot be created, cannot be destroyed, but can be transformed into one form to another, then I think when we die, whatever we are is transformed probably into various different forms. We probably split into, you know, a lot of different realms or states, but maybe a little part of us exists as some fraction of what we used to be, and that's the ghost. To me, that I consider that to be the soul as well. I don't see the difference. But I do point out the theological background behind soul, you know, because it certainly has that that cachet as well, too. I just think we go on and call it what you want. Call it spirit, call it ghost, call it soul. I think the terms are sort of interchangeable.
We're with John Kachuba. John, have you ever thought that it doesn't go on? I mean, has it ever entered your mind where you think it's over? It's over.
Sure. Absolutely.
It's a scary, it's a lonely feeling, isn't it?
Right. And I think that's part, you know, and that's a good point, George, because I think that's part of the interest in parapsychology, in the paranormal, in ghosts, because it's comforting, isn't it, to think that, you know, well, you know what, if there's ghosts out there, then that proves that there's some existence after death, and boy, that's nice. I don't want
to
die.
I mean, to an explorer, it's kind of exciting. Not that you want to end this life early,
right,
but that it goes on, and that whatever it is on the other side, in many cases, could be magnificent. But
right. But
if it just ends, I guess, who cares? Because you'll never know.
That's right. Well, and exactly. And certainly a lot of people feel that, you know, it just ends at the grave. I mean, that's it. Goodbye, and that's it. We're here, we're gone, and poof. And it may be the case. I hope it's not. I'm interested in this and exploring this precisely for those reasons, to try to understand, you know, if it's impossible at all to understand while I'm still here.
but if it ends, John, let's just take that position for a moment. You don't agree with that. I don't either. But if it ends, you die, that's it. Darkness over. It's over.
Right.
What are all these ghost stories we hear about? Where'd they come from?
Right. Well, I think, again, you'd have to go back to some of the things you talked about a little bit earlier, because I still think that there could be simply the wish fulfillment, you know, that I don't want it to be over, even though that may, in fact, be the truth. You know, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to believe that, no, it's not over. And so the way you do that is to convince yourself psychologically that happens, and to create incidents and events that would back up your preconceived belief.
See, I come back to this. And this is what convinces me that there's more than just this life. Our existence all by itself is so phenomenal. You know, the universe, the stars, the planets, why we're here, all the other animals, the trees, God knows what's out on other planets and other systems. None of this could be an accident. I just don't believe it. And because of that, I have to believe all these other things, the spirit realm, ghosts, life after death, because all of it to me is part of the same. It's all mixed in. So if you take the posture that this planet, that this incredible thing called life was not an accident, it's not a fluke of physics, then you got to believe in the rest of it.
Well, I would agree to that. I think... That I wouldn't call it a fluke of physics. I would certainly agree with you that all of it together is so miraculous, you know, that it doesn't make any sense that, yeah, okay, it's here for 60, 70, 80 years or whatever, and then you're done. You know, it doesn't seem possible that we would have such a short tenure, you know, that we should be, it seems more like that we should be part of all that, which would mean other existence. And for all I know, there might be, you know, several layers of existence beyond what we have now here. It might not even be as simple here and then there. It might be here and there and then there and then there. You know, I don't know. I mean, there could be an entire realm of worlds, in a sense, or dimensions or whatever that we go through to fully experience the entire universe. But I still don't know, and you know, I don't know how it got here. I don't know why it's here. I'm glad it's here. But I can't explain it more than that.
The little boy that was possessed, the one that the movie The Exorcist was based on.
Yes, right.
Something happened to that kid. Whether he was mentally deranged or not, I don't know. But something indeed happened to this kid. And, of course, the church claims that he was possessed. And, of course, Hollywood took that posture as well.
Right.
What do you think happened to somebody like that?
Well, it's hard to say. As I said earlier,
I would love to have been there.
Yeah, I would too. As I said earlier, I'm not a believer in possession by outside beings. You know, that something enters into you. And
so you think they're deranged, or there's an illness, or something?
Yeah, and I wouldn't even say, yeah, I guess deranged. That sounds so negative. It almost sounds.
But it's true.
Well, yes, I guess it would be. But I would consider that there's something psychological going on in those cases for whatever reason. And it might be something, you know, on a subconscious level that we control. You know, I just got finished reading a book, and I can't remember the title. It's a very long title, but it was published way back in the 1920s. And it was about the kahunas, you know, the ancient Polynesian shamans that are still around in Hawaii and other areas. And they had this theory about the soul, and they called it soul, well, sort of, being divided into three different components. And actually, it matches up pretty well with Freud's idea of ego, id, and superego, which is kind of interesting because these are, you know, primitive, in quotes, people that have been around for thousands of years. But they have this idea about separation of the various components, and that if under certain circumstances they can separate, and when that happens, all kinds of things can happen to you on a psychological basis. You become different. You can become a different person. That you need to have this wholeness together, that all three parts need to be working together, you know, as one whole. And you wonder if, you know, that's their philosophy. And then, of course, Freud talks about the same thing here in Western culture. You wonder if maybe possession isn't something like that, where something in that structure, if you want to call it a tripartite structure, you know, cuts loose or something. And I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a psychiatrist, so I can't go into it much more than that. But there's that possibility as well, that something is just not working, in is out of kilter in that three-part system. One is taking over. It's like Billy Milligan, in a sense. If you remember the story about Billy Milligan, the guy who had all these split personalities.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he was actually, interesting enough, he was actually an inmate at the Athens Lunatic.
Or Sybil.
Or Sybil, exactly, right, another one. All these personalities, where do they come from? And to me, possession is something along those lines, because that happens with those folks too. That personality comes out and takes control of their body. And a lot of times the other personalities aren't even aware of the other ones that are there. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. So I'm thinking that's all a matter of sort of fracturing, like an internal fracturing that happens among some people for some reason. But I still don't think that that's demonic. I think it's just something that happens for who knows what reason.
I mean, I've known people who are as docile can be. Mm-hmm. And then they go out and they drink. It doesn't have to be a lot.
Right.
Their personalities change. I mean, they become demonic. They become strange. Now, somebody once said on the program, well, they're possessed. When you drink like that, you know, somehow you've let your guard down.
Right.
And these entities take you over. I don't know. If that's not the case, then there's something in the brain that mixes with the alcohol they drink and triggers them. Because I'm telling you, you wouldn't know who they were.
Right. Well, and I think there is something to, I wouldn't call it possessed, where, again, a spirit takes over. But I think you're right when you say you let your guard down. Some people would say you let your guard down, and so then a spirit enters, a demon enters. I would say in cases like this, again, with possession and everything else, you let your guard down, or else it comes down for whatever reason. But once it's down, all that means is that the other components that are already in you take over. So if you're, you know, if your consciousness is gone, let's say, your subconscious might rise to fill that void. And who knows what your subconscious is thinking. Your subconscious is more your animal self rather than your intellectual thinking self, rational self.
If you had to place a bet, John, about the existence of the afterlife,
mm-hmm.
would you?
Yes, I would say there's something there.
We may never be able to prove it.
No, I know.
We come close with strange things. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, I keep harping back to this little Italian museum story,
right,
where all these workers there were skeptics and they aren't anymore. Something dramatic happened to these people.
That's true.
You know, as you go to these different spots, these haunted places or otherwise, are there some sad moments there too? I mean, do you sometimes hear glimpses of little children that are ghostly? Those things break me up.
Yeah, yeah.
They tear me apart.
Well, yeah. I mean, I actually had a case like that where I was investigating a old farmhouse with some people, and one of the people happened to be a psychic who I actually trust and feel that she's confident, capable. And she found two children that were there and basically, you know, lost, didn't know where they were supposed to be, were without relatives or parents or anything else like that. And, you know, she talked about it. She said that they were literally, the description she said, you know, was cowering in the corner of this room, you know. I thought, oh, my gosh. I mean, I'm a grandfather of
seven kids. That's sad.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but to her credit, she did what I wish most people would try to do in investigations like this, is she was able to contact these children. And as she said, you know, move them on, get them to where they needed to go. And she would tell them, she'd say, you know, your mother's there, your grandparents are there. And they left, as far as she knows.
Well, that's an interesting question. Why don't they move on? And let's talk about angels. And also, I want your ghost stories when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.